3.
Don't they know they're beaten?
Said Cybale, ducking out from cover to fire down the transverse approach to the main axial. Return fire tore up the bulkhead behind him. Shrapnel and flakes of metal drifted from the impacts, spiralling in the zero-gravity chill. Behind them, a melter-cut breach gusted with condensing air from the interior of the Stormbird locked to the Gorgorex's hull. Half a dozen Sons of Horus fired back, Mars Honor Squad, positioned all around the hexagonal approach. The absence of up or down, as relative terms, was a benefit of combat in zero gravity. The Voxnet crackled as Sion Azadine replied.
Would you yield to an enemy who thought you beaten?
Said the champion, his mortuary blade poised behind his combat shield. The Eye of Horus, emblazoned upon it, glinted with a web of frost in the void-chilled corridor.
No, but I'm 16th, said Cybale. Even the Iron 10th can't match that.
They appear to think differently, said Azadine. Then it's time we disabuse them of that foolishness, said Mar, hefting a wide-barreled weapon he'd appropriated from one of the support squads.
All cogs, coil-wrapped condensing tubes, and a tight ring of focus blades, the Volkite Caliver was a weapon more suited to lightly armoured targets, but it did have the advantage of being utterly lethal in confined spaces.
Since when does a captain deign to wield a caliver?
Asked Azadine, a man to whom the protocols of warfare were of paramount importance.
When he wants the job done yesterday, said Mar, and depressed the grip trigger.
A searing beam of tightly focused energy shot down the transverse approach. It impacted on the far wall of the axial approach and exploded in a billowing cloud of caustic fire. Phosphor-bright trails blazed with sudden, shocking intensity. There were no screams in a vacuum.
Azadine, said Mar. Go, now.
Sion Azadine spun out from cover, and his speed was something uncanny. Movement in low gravity was usually slow and painstaking, each step taken with magnetized boots. Mar's champion had no truck with that. Instead, he bounded from wall to wall, pushing off with limbs like coiled springs. He spun away from incoming rounds, and, with a last piston-like thrust from the ceiling, he slammed down onto the deck among the reeling survivors of the Volkite blast. His boots clamped the metal deck, and his sword reaped lives. Sprays of blood hung like red archways in the air. Mar released the Volkite weapon and left it floating behind him.
Let's go,
he said, and the rest of his honor squad followed him towards the enemy. Not that he expected to meet any resistance from here on in, since most of the ship's fighting strength had died in the void. All through the enemy ship, breacher squads were converging on strategic targets, life support, reactor cores, engine spaces. The last thing Mar wanted was for the remaining crew to scuttle their vessel in spite. He needed it in one piece. A starship had numerous routes through its superstructure, but only one to the command bridge. And that target was Mars. By the time he and his warriors reached the main axial, Sion Azadine had killed everyone there. 6 bodies floated in the axial, trailing drifting slicks of vivid crimson. A blob of blood affixed itself to Mars' shoulder guard, painting his legion markings in red. He turned and moved up the axial towards the shuttered bridge interlock. Its defense guns weren't firing, which told Mar they were either out of ammunition or no longer functional. Most likely the latter, the arrogance of the Iron Hands leading them to believe they would never be boarded. Crackling voices spoke of areas seized within the ship. Resistance was fierce, but minimal. Clearly this ship had been operating with something less than a skeleton crew. That they had managed to fly it and fight at all was to be admired. Schematics overlaid the visor display within his helm, his warriors picked out in pale blue.
Avakol, bring your breeches to me, ordered Mar.
Moments later, he felt the vibration of heavy footfalls along the axial as a demi-squad of Rukal breeches approached. Avakol Hur led them, a febrile warrior with a potent love of all things explosive. He carried a gore-smeared thunderhammer, and his iron armor was a filthy mix of ocean green and rust-colored stains. A breacher never cleaned the blood from his battleplate, and Hur was no exception. He'd been a line warrior during the Jubal Secundus liberation, but earned his command during the bloody ship-to-ship fighting above Istvan. Mar jerked his thumb at the bridge access. Get that open. The breacher sergeant nodded and hefted his thunder hammer.
My pleasure.
Mar stormed through the ragged cherry-red ruin of the entrance to the bridge. The Rukal breachers followed, fanning out with their shields locked and bolters levelled, ready to annihilate any resistance. The bridge was empty. Or as good as empty, it made no difference. A single flesh-spare warrior stood at its centre, locked to the deck and with a photonic-edged war scythe. A dozen servitors flanked him, armed with a mix of clubbing weapons and tools adapted to form rudimentary firearms. An iron father, if Mar wasn't mistaken. The machinery around him was smashed and cratered, ruined beyond repair and useless. Deliberate sabotage to keep whatever data this vessel's logic engines had once held from falling into enemy hands. But Mar had seen how much information could be retrieved from supposedly irreparable machines by the tech sorceries of the Mechanicum, and knew something of value could probably still be extracted.
I am Oktar Uldin, said the Iron Father. Which of you dogs wishes to die first?
Mar almost laughed.
You and I. We fight an honourable duel to the death. Is that what Shadrach Medjuson is teaching you now, even after Arasak?
Even a warrior with so little flesh left to him couldn't help but react to the name of the 10th Legion's new saviour.
He teaches us that however we die, it will be with honour,
said Uldin, dropping into a fighting crouch with his scythe held to one shoulder.
No, said Mar. It will be screaming in agony when we torment what little flesh you have left beyond anything even you can stand.
He turned away.
He's all yours, Azadine. Make him bleed, but don't kill him. The War Master will want him alive.
They were waiting for Mar when he returned from Dwell, as he'd known they would be. They denied him the War Master, but what had they expected him to do? Sit meekly by and accept the judgment of those he knew to be wrong? That wasn't the 16th's way of doing things. It wasn't his way of doing things. Not anymore. The Stormbird's engines growled as they powered down, hissing and steaming in the rain. Dwell's atmosphere was paying the inevitable price for a ferocious war fought in low orbit. Numerous space-based gun batteries and dry docks had finally come down, and the sky over Taijan was lousy with distortion. Actinic thunder boomed over the mountains, and electrical tempests danced on the horizon. The smell of wet plascrete and foaming ocean water was strong. Rain battered the ground and the outer hull of the gunship. Mar, Cybele, and Azadine stood at the top of the assault ramp as a strobing sheet of purple lightning lit the Stormbird's interior.
This could be bad, yes?
Asked Azadine.
It could be, agreed Mar. We embarked on an unauthorized mission, took ships without the express consent of the War Master. Yes, this could be bad.
But what we learned, said Cybele, from the very presence of the Iron Hands, from Uldin, well, that's got to count for something, otherwise, what was the point?
That's what I hope, said Mar.
This could be bad,
repeated Azadine, wrapping his two delicate fingers around the hilt of his mortuary blade.
They could strip us of our rank, our position, our honour.
Well, they could do a lot worse than that, said Cybele. You've seen some of the changes in the Legion, the things Erebus brought with him, the old Chthonian ways coming back. Well, I'm not saying I'm against that per se, but some of those ways were left behind for good reason.
Mar straightened his spine. We're delaying, and we're better than that. Come on. He set off down the ramp, finding not four warriors awaiting him, but five. Four, he'd expected, but the fifth... Horus Lupercal, the Primarch. Encased in glossy black plate of colossal dimensions, he was a titan amongst giants. The glaring eye on his breastplate seethed in amber, the dark slit at its centre seeming to regard Mar with utter indifference. A pelt of resin-stiffened fur mantled Lupercal's shoulders, the long fangs of its upper jaw splayed over one curved shoulder guard. He held Worldbreaker in one hand, as easily as Ma might carry a slender data wand. It was of cold iron, its weight unimaginable. His other hand was bladed with Reaper's talons, a tearing weapon as far beyond the power of a lightning claw as a legionary was above a mortal soldier. But it was his face, a face that was both beautiful and cruel, that drew Ma in. A face that was the fountainhead of the Legion. Hadn't their renaming after Zenobia simply affirmed what they all knew? Every one of the Mournival called themselves True Sons, as did Ma, but they were pale imitations of the War Master's perfection. Only Axamand, with his terrible surgical rebirth, came anywhere close to the essence of the War Master. Only now did Ma realize just how terrifying that was. He dropped to one knee, Azadine and Cybale following his lead a heartbeat later.
"Sire,"
he began, but the sensation of great weight on one shoulder stopped him from saying more. Worldbreaker rested on his armor, kept from crushing him only by the War Master's great strength. He held the enormous, ultra-dense mace at full extension, a feat none gathered there could match.
"You've been busy, Tybalt," said Horus.
"I have been fighting our enemies, my lord," he said, keeping his head bowed.
"So I gather, drawing up missions of your own and executing them with my ships."
Ma finally dared look up, and a tremor ran down his spine as his eyes met those of the War Master. Better men than he had quailed before that iron gaze. Armies had laid down their weapons rather than stand against this mortal god. Yet even in the storm cloud fury, he saw a glimmer of amusement behind this show of anger. Hoping he was right, Ma knew there was only one way to respond.
"I did, sire," said Ma, "to prove the broken warriors we left in our wake at Isfahan are no longer broken. They are organized, efficient, in contact."
Horus removed Worldbreaker from Ma's shoulder.
"How do you know this?" he asked.
"Because he is going to tell me," said Ma, rising and beckoning Avakhol Hur from the Stormbird.
The Bloody Breacher and his fellow gutter killers led Oktar Uldin down the assault ramp, his neck clamped in the spiked collar of a man-catcher. Snapping sparks of electrical discharge burned the meat and metal of his neck, and his steps were stiff and ungainly as artificial nerves were stimulated with pain signals.
"One of the Iron Tenth," said Horus.
"You took him in this system?"
"Him and his vessel," said Ma, "lurking out by the Azoth Gate, keeping watch on our comings and goings and passing that information back to Shadrach Medjuson."
"You can't know that for sure," said Abaddon.
"Can't I?" snapped Ma. "While you were sitting on your complacent behinds, I took action. You were so sure of your own prowess that you never gave any other legion credit for being as good, as resilient, as tough as us. Well, guess what? They are strong, and they are fighting back."
Horus stepped in and took hold of Ma's shoulder guards, pulling him in tight to embrace him in a clatter of plate.
"Tybalt Ma," he said as he released him, "truly, you are a son of the North, the aspect of illumination, discovery, wisdom, and understanding. As ancient Polaris was permanent, so too are you a symbol of the Eternal."
"Thank you, my lord," said Ma,
but Horus wasn't done yet.
"Yet the ancient peoples of old Earth looked upon the North as a place of darkness, an aspect regarded with suspicion and, aye, even terror. The great Shakespeare spoke of demons who are substitutes under the lonely monarch of the North."
I don't understand, my lord," said Ma,
as Avakhol Hur forced Oktar Uldin to his knees before the War Master.
"It means that you have been away from your brothers too long, I think," said Horus,
a single killing claw lifting Uldin's battered chin. The Iron Father's eyes were gone, plucked by Azadine's mortuary blade, and now nothing more than sliced cables hanging down over his cheeks.
"That you have become the lone wolf, the hunter who works best alone."
"What are you saying, sire? Exile?"
"No. But whether you are right or wrong, Tybalt, you will cost me dearly," said Horus.
If you are right, and Metusen is raising a storm in our wake, then I must send warriors to find him and kill him. If you are wrong, I must punish you for your disobedience. So which is it to be?
I'm not wrong, said Mar, certainty filling him.
Horus regarded him for a moment, as though weighing up which option would cost him the least. But that glimmer of amusement was still there, and Mar wondered if the others had seen it, or even knew Lupercal had made his decision long before Mar's Stormbird had landed.
"Tell me what you want, Tybalt," said Horus. "Do you want to hunt down these shattered legions, root them from their shadowed lairs and drive them into the light? Destroy them?"
I want to finish what we started at Istvan," Mar replied.
"Then you will be my hunter in the void. I will give you ships and warriors, weapons and power to do what must be done to end this threat."
"My lord,"
said Abaddon, "the campaign will succeed or fail with or without Tybalt," said Horus, lifting his talon and stopping any further discussion. "I go to Molech, Tybalt," said Horus, fastening his gaze upon him once more. "Tell me what you are going to do."
Mar stood tall and said, "I'm going to bring you Shadrach Medjuson's head."
That was The Either by Graham McNeil, read by Jonathan Keeble.
That was Shattered Legions. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2017.